Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, Tim Kitzer here from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. and you're listening to Growing Up the Same with Trayvon Edwards and Jason Madison. Ooh, boom shakalaka. And now here's your starting lineup. Trayvon Edwards, Jason Madison. Ooh, boom shakalaka.
Tim Kitzrow is an American voice actor and the iconic voice of your favorite sports franchises. NBA Jam, NFL Blitz, NHL Hits, and MLB Slugfest, and over a dozen classic pinball games, with NBA Jam, which grossed over $2 billion to date.
Cha-ching!
Introduced
boom shakalaka
to the NBA lexicon and earned pop culture immortality.
Immortality? You gotta be kidding me!
And now it's time for the one or the two with J Skills.
Would you rather be a kid or an adult?
Kid.
GameStop or AMC?
AMC.
Ready Player One or Tron?
Ready Player One.
Bill Clinton or George Clinton?
George Clinton. Bring that funkadelic dunk, George! Woo, kaboom!
80s hoops or 90s hoops?
90s hoops.
Reggie Miller or Dan Marley?
Reggie Miller.
Karl Malone or Sean Kemp?
Sean Kemp.
Vodka or tequila?
The Rain Man! Tequila.
Jason Madison is on fire!
He's on fire or boom shakalaka?
Boom shakalaka!
Blackhawks or Bears?
Bears.
Cubs or White Sox?
Cubs.
Oprah or Obama?
Obama.
Quick naps or long naps?
Oh, quickies.
Hoodie or jacket?
Jacket!
Phone on silent or the ringer on?
Silent, baby.
You've reached Jason Madison voicemail. Jason can't come to the phone right now because he's on fire. No, seriously, he was heating up some pizza in the toaster oven and his sleeve caught fire. Get out the baking powder. Leave my message at the buzzer and you won't be rejected. Kaboom!
Grilled cheese or PB&J?
Grilled cheese, man.
Smart Water or Evian?
Evian.
The Rock or Stone Cold Steve Austin?
The Rock!
Patrick Ewing or Alonzo Mourning?
Alonzo.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan! Jordan!
Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith?
I'll take Sanders.
Scorpion or Sub-Zero?
Sub-Zero! Johnny Cage! All the
Gretzky
same guy.
Or Gordie Howe?
Gretzky.
The Breakfast Club or Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Ferris Bueller, man. Chicago, hometown.
Chinese food or Italian food?
Chinese.
Hank Azaria or Seth MacFarlane?
Oh, tough one. I'll go with Hank Azaria.
John Bonham or Keith Moon?
John Bonham.
Dave Grohl or Lars Ulrich?
Misty Grohl.
Friends or Seinfeld?
Seinfeld.
Fresh Prince or Martin?
Martin.
Saved by the Bell or Family Matters?
I didn't even know. I missed that era.
King Kong or Godzilla?
I love my King Kong, man.
Tim Burton's Batman or Christopher Nolan's Batman?
Tim Burton.
Beavis and Butthead or King of the Hill?
King of the Hill.
Iron Man or Captain America?
Iron Man!
Hulk Hogan or The Undertaker?
The Undertaker.
Tiger Woods or Floyd Mayweather?
Tiger Woods!
NBA Finals or the Super Bowl?
Finals.
The sports bar or the arcade?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm going arcade.
Playing video games or drawing?
Drawing.
Two-hand touch or flag football?
Tackle, baby.
Two-hand. Cheat codes or game glitches?
Cheat codes. I'm just making this stuff up now, man.
And the last one, NBA Jam or NFL Blitz?
NBA Jam!
That was the one of the two.
Growing Up the Same is heating up.
I love how you just did it in the voices, though, man. Like, it's, how can you not smile when you hear that, dude?
I know, seriously.
I would, if I was the voice of like an iconic game like that, I probably would be like ordering food through the drive-thru, just using it anytime, just kind of remixing it.
So, we gotta get,
so we gotta like, Talk about food and to-go food and Chinese foods. Like when Curry hits a three-pointer, I was doing highlights for the Warriors for a couple of years. Like, what's for dinner? Curry surprise! It's fun, easy to make, and the crowd loves it. Boom shakalaka! What does three-time champion Steph Curry have for breakfast? Snap, crackle, pop, nice crisp threes. Make them a part of your NBA diet. How do you like your curry? Extra spicy. I got to actually meet his dad in Charlotte. He was, you know, he's a broadcaster down there. And we had a clip of Steph Curry from a few years earlier tossing a ball at his dad at the scorer's table. It hits his dad. And his dad looks around. He sees Steph. He's at half court in his shoes. He steps up and he hits a three. So we put that into a highlight for the game. I did a Wizards NBA Jam game. And a great voiceover. It's on YouTube. But doing that kind of stuff off the cuff, you know, this kind of stuff. Coming up with sayings that I could never have done for NBA Jam, doing them for NBA teams, especially the Warriors, has been a dream come true. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but started a few years back with the Rockets. I got to go there on their 20th anniversary back-to-back championship night. So commissioner was there, the great teams, all the players from them. They put up my, it was the first one I'd done, highlights on the Jumbotron. They have the biggest Jumbotron in the league. And just highlights of the team. And I was just sitting there and having this little, like, six-year-old kids next to me. I told him that I was going to be doing it because I asked him to take a couple pictures. He said, man, you're funny, man. I'm like, I still got it. I got a six-year-old laughing.
So what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say.
I just knocked you off the rails, didn't I, Jason?
Yeah, you did.
Get that stuff out of here. You got rejected.
My wife always
says, not tonight, Jason.
Have you ever been in the room with another, like, legendary voice actor or somebody who's also voiced a video game? Because I was thinking of – Trey was talking about video games, and I was thinking about Slink Johnson, who I kind of know I've interacted with. He did the GTA, Franklin on GTA. But obviously, like, you got John Madden. You got Hank Azaria, who I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Any other people have you interacted with? And just, well, it sounded weird when you guys were together.
I've just started doing the different video game shows and throwback pinball and video game shows around the country. And luckily, I was able to finally meet all the guys from Mortal Kombat. And the irony is, you know, it was all done here in Midway, Chicago. So we were both like making our games at the same time, but had never met. So 20 something years later, we met at a convention. We become fast friends, and they've introduced me to some people, the guy who does Mario's voice and some other folks that I'm not really familiar with, but that's kind of it, you know, just starting to meet people like passing by where we do panels at the shows. But I'd like to meet more. And Hank Azaria is definitely one of my heroes. Love all of his work.
Man, that's sick, man, being able to meet those iconic characters and, you know, the actors and stuff like that. So we're going to talk about some stuff that people might not know behind The Voice.
Okay.
So you grew up playing drums. What's your connection to drums as a kid?
Well, first of all, the drums, the backstory is that's the reason that I'm in this business, because I played drums since I was a kid, and, you know, save up my snow shoveling, the lawn money to buy a set, you know, went through like two cheap Japanese sets, spent $450 at 15 years old on a set of Rogers drums. And those were the Cadillac of drums back in the day. Anyway, I would, you know, play this, you know, kind of rock and roll band, basement high school band, like a lot of kids did. And for a moment, like, I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be John Bonham. I'm going to be Keith Moon. It was funny, you know, ask me about those guys. But of course, I went in a different direction, fell in love with acting, but kept the drums always going, brought them to college, you know, found practice rooms. After college, had weekend bands. When I came to Chicago, put them in a $100 Volkswagen, loaded them up, came out here and kept playing. And I met a couple of guys. I said, I just want to play in the weekend because everybody's busy now. We've got our own careers, kids, whatever. And at that little weekend warrior group, one of the guys works at Williams Bally Midway. His job was putting music, hiring talent, putting scripts and sound into pinball games. And he said, hey, we need someone to do a Mr. Howell for a Gilligan's Island pinball game. You're at Second City. You're pretty funny. Can you do Mr. Howell? I was like, Gilligan, maybe we could bribe Kona. Lovey. It was as simple as that. He's like, oh, come on in. We'll give you $50 an hour. And then next game, it's like, hey, we're doing Twilight Zone. Can you do Rod Serling? It's like, there you go. Popeye, 15 games later. I get offered NBA Jam. So long story short is, had I not been keeping my passion, my love of drums, just for the sake of keeping that alive, I would never have been in the right place to fall into this business, which I never dreamt that I would get into. I was just pursuing acting, stage work, comedy, you know, Second City. Had a lot of dreams, you know, going in different directions. Like, I'm going to be a stage actor. No, I want to do Second City. I want to do Saturday Night Live. And then this kind of fell into my lap. And I didn't realize until several years in that this could actually be a career. You know, it was just extra bread, you know, having fun on the side. And, you know, so it was kind of an accidental career, which is funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Always stumble into something or creating it.
Yeah.
And being very good at it. And obviously, you know, so many people grew up on your voice, just kind of spending time at those different arcades and putting the hours in on certain video games. And, you know, it's nostalgia that puts you in a good smile on your face. Mm-hmm. What is your connection to drawing?
Drawing? Well, let's see. As a kid, here's one I did. John Lennon. I don't know if you can see it with all his reflections. But we got big family, five boys, two girls, and we didn't have a TV for many years, and we would always just, you know, create stuff, draw. My parents were really good encouraging us to be creative, so started out just doing cartoons, caricatures, drawing trucks, drawing faces, and kept it going. I've done, you know, played around with paints, done collage work. I actually put together a collage for a movie pitch for Phil Jackson and his agent Todd Musburger, based on Sacred Hoops. And I did it by just cutting and pasting pictures before using a computer or Photoshop. And long story short is the presentation got into the office and they were so impressed with it. He actually said, we're going to green light this. You know, we love this concept. It's kind of, it was telling the story through the, if you guys have read Sacred Hoops, you'll know what I'm talking about, but if you haven't, go back to it. It's a great read. That it would be the players, Phil Jackson, other people reading excerpts from the books and showing then kind of a lot in slow motion, isolate the moves and the moments in basketball that, you know, pertain to these specific quotes, and cut out the arenas and put in huge nature backdrops, Grand Canyon, like spectacular scenery, to try to like turn into more mystical kind of thing, which is what, you know, Sacred Hoops and all of his Native American religion, et cetera, is all about. So it would be like the telling of the story with a visual dance, isolating the moves of basketball. But that was all due to my artwork. Once again, creativity. I got in the office and Phil said, Todd said, he goes, I'm not sure exactly how you got in here. He goes, but, you know, 95% of the people who reach my front office never, you know, get to me. You got to me, you got in here. And he goes, you got 20 minutes. Let's go. And by the time we walked out, he said, you're going to be proud of the way I pitched this to Phil. And now to jump ahead to the sad ending, Phil and the two Jerrys, Jerry Krause, Jerry Reinsdorf, were at such odds at that point. They could not get the approval for him to use the Bulls logo, the everything Bulls, you know, corporate, to put into film. And I guess that they felt that he would be upstaging them, you know, the battle of egos back then, of like, this is Phil telling the story of why he's successful, why he was the guru of the Bulls for whatever reason. So that's kind of a long story of how creativity still maintains, you know, it's part, a big part of my life. The voiceover is what you guys hear. But what happened also early on is I started writing the scripts when we got to NFL Blitz, Slugfest, Mutant Football League, the NBA Jam with EA Sports. So that's when I took all my Second City acting, love of comedy, writing, to put it into the game. So what people don't realize, I'm the only one in the video game industry that writes their own material as well as voicing it. And I've also done all the four major league sports. Those are some of the things I'm most proud of, that people don't know, that I speak about on panels, that I'm not just, was never just a voice for hire, a gun for hire, that I was creating content. So when you mentioned like Seinfeld, my time at Second City, you know, all the different people, Tina Fey, who did 30 Rock, I got to be the guy in the video game industry that created, you know, the worlds, the characters, the dialogue. So it was really a lucky chance for me to take that creativity and put it into the video game business, where usually it's just, you know, guys at the company, you know, punch out the script and go, here, read it, you know. And the stock sports game, you hear, you know, Madden, whatever, they're just trying to recreate NBA banter, get the voices in. and you get a good recreation. It's a really tough job to recreate reality in a studio, and those guys do a good job of it. But my work is different in that it's kind of like this fantasy world, and it's in anything you want to say as a fan sitting on the couch, you can say it. Like when a guy in NBA Jam for EA Sports, you know, is firing from the corner, it's like, you know, Trayvon from the corner and like rummaging through his girlfriend's top dresser drawer finds nothing but nylon.
Trayvon Edwards is on fire.
Jason blocks a shot. Oh, I love it when you call me Big Blocka. Like my wife always says, not tonight, rejected. And that's where it became really fun for me. It's like, I can be the guy who can say anything that I want and create this world of kind of anarchy, fun, a game, you know, circus atmosphere that goes along with the crazy over-the-top action. And that's what was so unique about Midway Games is they always brought something extra. It wasn't like any other game. And gosh, you know, Blitz, Slugfest, Hits, and NBA Jam all one after another. You know, what a great run for that company.
Tim, what about going back to your pinball games? Which other pinball games were you the voice of? I was a big fan of the Addams Family game in particular, but
didn't do that. It did. I've done all three Elvira games, and the most recent one was actually with Stern Pinball. So Elvira Scared Stiff and Elvira House of Horrors were like, Elvira, I've never come out before dark, and right now I'm getting nailed in the coffin big time. When the coffins are rocking, don't come a mocking. Oh, Elvira. I did The Shadow, Whodunit, Red and Ted's Adventure, Junkyard Dog, Attack from Mars, Revenge from Mars. I forget a bunch of them, but NBA Pinball, too. We did two NBA Pinball games. One was called Fast Break, and the other was NBA Pinball. Great artwork on NBA Pinball that was with Midway. Great backboard on it.
So you mentioned basketball, and this comes full circle. What is your connection with basketball as a kid?
Basketball, man. I remember someone putting a basketball in my hand in like third or fourth grade in gym class, and that rim was a mile and a half up. I could barely hold the ball, but I loved the idea. I stuck with it, and then playing on an 8-foot hoop out somewhere. And I was always a short kid. You know, I was the shortest in my class, like all the way through, you know, ninth grade, I think. And then I just sprouted up, and we used to go to a gymnasium and go on one of those old springboards before the mini trams, put some mats down and dunk when we were like 5'5" or something like that. But eventually I kept at it, and I was able to dunk a basketball monster jam at the end of high school. So I kept playing, never played organized basketball, was involved with theater. And we had a team that was like, you know, the best in the state. So there wasn't really a spot on the bench for me, but I actually got better as I got older, kept playing at the Y the whole time here in Chicago. When I was doing NBA Jam, I'd play 3 or 4 times a week, and the kids would come around, and, you know, this little kid, let's say it's a little Trayvon there. It's like, what's your name? Trayvon. I go, Trayvon from downtown, kaboom, nothing but net. And back then, every kid knew NBA Jam. Go, hey, man, you sound like that guy in NBA Jam. I go, hey, Trayvon, I am the guy. He goes, no, you. He come up and look at me. It's like if you told me you were Santa Claus, you'd like, get close. You know, like, look at you. No, you ain't that guy. And I'd do some more stuff. Then all of a sudden, 3 or 4 other kids he told come up like, hey, you the guy. Before you know it, I got literally 10 or 15 kids. They'd all play me one-on-one, and I'd call all their names, call their whole game. It was the best of times, man. It was like the Pied Piper. I was loving it.
Do you ever get tired of, like, people saying, like, yo, do the voice?
Man, you have to realize, like, when I told you about how I fell into this career, all accident, man. And it's like your life can go so many different ways. It was everything that I had this opportunity, and I realized how hard it is, how many people would kill to have this opportunity. And, you know, it made a different life for me. So no, man, it's my sweet spot. It's my connection with people who love it, because I don't even understand. I'm not a video game player. I could not go back and be a kid to have what the experience is to have fallen in love with a video game when arcade and video games were really coming out, where it was really different, where you're not jaded like people now have like so many hundreds of choices. It was like you went to the arcade, it's like it's Mortal Kombat, it's NBA Jam, it's, you know the big hits back then. So for me to be connected with that, and then when I go to shows and someone will come up with their kid, it's like, you know, 40 years old now, and the little kid's like, are you the guy who says boom shakalaka? Because they've shared the game with their kids and realize I'm part of their family fun. Man, I never get tired of it.
Feel blessed. Amazing. So when I think about it, my connection you know, obviously you shared some stuff with your childhood, and me and Jason are probably going to share our childhood and, you know what I mean, how you became instrumental in our lives. So NBA Jam was that 93, 94 around that time.
Yeah, 93.
I was nine. And actually, it's so crazy. This guy named Joe, who owned a store, it was like a corner store or something like that. And he had games like arcade in the store. So chips and all that other things that you needed. It was kind of like a bodega, but on the West Coast. I'm from Compton, California. And he had originally Street Fighter in there, and then it had Mortal Kombat. And every time games were rotating as popular as they were, and NBA Jam finally came in there. And I used to love Michael Jordan. Now, that was one thing. That was one red flag for me, that Michael Jordan wasn't a character on that game.
Right.
But they had Shaquille O'Neal in the arcade coin-op version. So I'm like playing a game, and I would beg my aunt, you know, for quarters, and I would keep playing. And obviously, you know, it required four quarters to complete the entire game. Well, it got to a point where they released on, you know, home platforms.
Right.
And a commercial came out. And I remember begging my grandma, like, yo, I got to get Jam. Like, it has to happen. So she delivered. She got it on Sega. Man, I remember just reading.
That wasn't cheap, man.
64. That's the thing. A lot of people complain about games now. That game was $64.99 when it first came out on Sega. So the price ain't never changed. And I got really good. I knew how to release the ball at a certain time to, like, knock down threes. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, you know, early on before we started to record about a few hacks in the game. Can you tell us about a few hacks in the game that happened where the creator had a specific Easter egg for the Chicago Bulls?
Well, I the only one that I know, and maybe you're referring to with the Bulls, is that because they were, you know, our rivals were the Pistons at that point. Well, Mark Tomelos is from Detroit. And so he set it up so that if you're taking a last second shot in the final seconds against the Pistons, you're going to miss, basically.
Yeah.
He did not want the Bulls to win. So.
And I was a big Pippen Horace Grant combo, or, you know, BJ Armstrong.
Yeah.
So I use them often, you know what I mean? Just hoping, like, oh, if I beat the game, I get access to Michael Jordan. Cause it just wasn't really, I mean, you had Game Genie and you had some Game Pro magazines, but they didn't really give too much intel of, like, the element of surprise. And I know you got special characters like Bill Clinton and George Clinton.
Yeah.
Air Dog.
Beastie Boys.
And I mean, you can go down the line with those characters, and they started to cross platform and add, you know, Mortal Kombat characters on there as well. But, you know, what was the process of you coming up with
Boom Shakalaka?
He's on fire. You know, you mentioned earlier that you wrote these, you know, into the game in the situation, and most people normally are handed a sheet to read.
Well, I should have prefaced it by saying, you know, my intro, Jam being the first game, was not a script that I wrote. That one was John Hay, who wrote the great theme music for it. He was one of the guys who, you know, we worked on a bunch of pinball games together. So back then, he did everything. He wore all the hats. He did the music for Jam. He produced it. He edited. He engineered it. He wrote the script. He hired me. He, you know, everything. And now you'll have literally, you know, 10 guys doing all those jobs. But anyway, really what the NBA was back at that time, it was Marv Albert Game of the Week Sunday. So that voice was the voice of the NBA. Like, there were others, there were people before him, you know, I forget, Dick Stockton or whatever, when it was on CBS. But in that NBA Jam era, that was what the soundtrack of the NBA was. So he basically just watched. And, it, you know, I at some point, I decided I'm going to tell the truth, like what the origins of Jam were, that it was really inspired by Marv Albert. You know, it's like I wanted to stake a claim as I got older, like I didn't want to give him all the credit. It's like, well, I didn't write the script. John did for the first one. So if you go back, that was Marv Albert, especially during when a Pistons game was going on. You remember Vinnie Johnson, it was called the Microwave. He'd come in off the bench. He was that first great six player. And he goes, the human microwave, Vinnie Johnson, he's heating up. Johnson is on fire. That was Marv Albert stuff, you know, rejected. Yes. Wide open. And that's what got my voice up in that register. I have a deeper voice. I have a deeper voice than Marv Albert. But back then, I wanted to get that excitement because that's what we knew as that crazy hype. I might have taken it further because I knew that, you know, we wanted to create a certain energy, enthusiasm, you know, fast-paced game. But it all started out with a kind of like Marv vibe. And it wasn't until Blitz that I started writing, you know, changed my voice. Obviously, I didn't have to do Marv for that. So I was, welcome to NFL Blitz, Farvez Freeman in the end zone, touchdown. So I got the grittier sound. Then I did the baseball back to NBA Jam with EA Sports. Then they just said, write the script. And that's why you got all those lines, like I said, you know, that I was telling you before, where it got more creative. Now it wasn't just the soundtrack of a basketball game. Now it got into the guy who could say anything, like your buddy, you know, sitting next to you watching the game, making, you know, the more, you know, pointed, you know, sense of humor kind of stuff. So, yeah, I didn't have a hand in the first script. It's so funny that that was the billion-dollar game. And the one that everyone remembers, there are a lot of fans that don't even know about the EA Sports version. We did two versions, 2010, 2011. That's my more creative stuff, you know. It's where I got to have full charge. So it was other games that I thought, you know, I had more of an impact where I could understand it. People said, wow, you know, you're really talented. You're really good. It's like, all I did is basically read a short list of NBA Jam, NBA sound bites from Marv Albert for the first one, but right time, right place. The mashup of seeing the visuals, the game, you know the whole story. Why I was in the eye of the perfect storm, and I don't know if anybody could have done it at the time. You know, my voice stands out now, and it's hard to imagine someone else doing it. But I was at that point just a gun for hire. You know, the timbre of my voice, how I did it, the excitement of the calls. I'm happy that they resonate, that people responded to it. But I don't think it was me showing off what I can do best. And, you know, it's funny because maybe other people say, no, that was perfect. That was best. It was simple. It was, you know, straight ahead. But I've had more enjoyment, I think, doing all the other games because, as I said, there was more creativity, more of my fingerprint on it.
Now, with the specific action of He's on Fire, and that being a part of the game, that was built into the game of, okay, you make two shots in a row, you're heating up. You make three shots in a row, you're on fire, and now you can't miss. That was something that was an initial concept of the original game, and then they just had you voice that, or how did that?
Well, that's interesting. And I also just do a quick plug for a movie called Insert Coin, just came out a couple months ago. It's made by one of the Midway employees, Josh Sway, and he interviewed 70 people, including Shaq, former NBA players, Mark Turmel, of course, the creator. So all the details are in that. Also, NBA Jam, the book, has all these great details. But the weird thing was, it was not even going to be an NBA licensed title. It was just going to be the first motion capture basketball game. Their previous one was called Arch Rivals, which was a animated basketball game. So they're halfway through it, and the CEO of the company said, he goes, what do you mean? He goes, we got to do this NBA. We got to get an NBA license. And they go, well, I didn't think you could afford it. It's like, it's going to cost money. He's like, well, we got to do an NBA license. So it wasn't even going to be NBA a Jam. It was just going to be like Jam. And halfway through also, the creator, Mark Turmel, had used Fire graphics for a couple other games, and he was hanging out at lunch at Burger King, and they were trying to figure out ways that they knew they had to keep people putting the quarters, and they go, we got to give them, you know, that Easter egg, something to encourage them, especially if they're down far late in the game. If they lose, they're going to walk away. They're not going to feel good. They're not going to want to get in the next game. So it's like, how do we have like come back? It's like, well, how about if they make two in a row? Blah, blah, blah. And so they kind of came up with it right in the middle, like, he's heating up. And then how about we throw in the fire graphics? So if you make three in a row, you catch fire, then you could just, like, you know, make the next couple. So it was just an accidental kind of like, you know, session think tank at the Burger King. So, yeah, I could put those graphics in. We could do this. And they came back, and one of the other guys, Eugene Jarvis, one of the great designers in the game industry, was watching them do the dunk you know, frames. And he said, how about make it a little bit higher? And they just kind of kept going. People kept laughing the higher he went. And another guy, Sal DeVito, one of the co-creators, like, no, man, it's not realistic at all. He goes, this has got to be a realistic game. He thought he was making a realistic sim. You look back at NBA Jam, it looks kind of cartoony and outdated. But at the time, that was the shit. You know, it was reality. And, you know, Mark had a different idea. It's like, no, it's got to be more fun. And he's like, no, it's got to be real. People are going to believe, you know, a 20-foot dunk and on fire. So they had to go back and forth. They all, you know, obviously they made the right decision. So, yeah, a lot of accidental stuff. But we were just recording he's heating up and he's on fire anyway, because I said that was a you know, traditional kind of NBA, you know, Marv Albert thing. He's heating up, he's on fire. They just happened to go together.
Yeah, that and then the freeze frame with all the flash bulbs going off during.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, those are such iconic moments. It's funny to think that people were going back and forth about whether or not it being realistic was necessary.
Right.
So, we needed the cartoonish aspect of that to make the game more engrossing.
Yeah. So, and then like the big heads was kind of initiated just because sometimes people had trouble like identifying their player. Like, well, give them a little cheat mode so they can like really follow their guy. They also had to put the arrow in the color, like, because a lot of people were playing the wrong guy. They thought they were the AI, you know, if there was just a 2-on-2 or something. So there was a lot of things that just were kind of made up along the way. Also in the very beginning, they all had the same abilities. And when they were testing the game, they overheard some guy say, oh man, don't let Stockton hit a three, 'cause he hits all the three, or, you know, talking about specific attributes. And Mark went like, oh man, no, they don't know that like Shaq has the same attributes as Stockton. It's like, we got to change. Such an obvious thing, you would think. So, like, you know, as genius as he is, they were so intent on just, you know, like, we got to get these guys. No one had ever done that before, where every player had his own ability unique to his real life avatar. I mean,
that's
avatar.
That's hilarious when you think about it. If Shaq could shoot like Mark Price, like, I would probably lose. I'll probably break that game. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm glad that someone just uttered that, just because you really think about it. You know, the players that didn't have such a dunk ability, they had that one little dunk that they would do close by the basket. It's the reverse jam or the two hand. But having a guy like Derek Harper do a flip dunk you can go down a line of certain characters that just didn't have crazy dunk abilities, just would just ruin it. So I'm glad that they got really freaky with it. And
it would have been a very generic game. I think that was huge in the success. And when I talk to people at NBA Jam tournaments at conventions and such, they all talk about their unique strategies and players they choose and how they do it. And there was a great meme, I think I saw it on Twitter, John Stockton sitting, and someone put in the NBA Jam game on the screen. It's like, you know, 26 years later, John Stockton's still trying to dunk an NBA Jam.
You know what? I was thinking, how did they come about breaking the glass in the fourth quarter?
I don't remember. Don't remember how that came up. And I'm sure it's in NBA Jam, the book or something. But
I'll probably have to go back and look at it. But I mean, were you also the voice of College Slam?
Yes. Yep.
So College Slam is, for people who don't know, and I consider it the little brother.
Yeah.
But College Slam had like a crazy, first of all, I had a crazy box because it had the basketball chewing into the rim and but had a similar look.
Yeah, Acclaim had gotten the license from Midway to do the NBA Jam title because they had a deal going where they were going to start to do the home market, because Midway was just all about selling, you know, the arcade. So they weren't into, you know, selling software for the home games. So anyway, once Acclaim got that title, Midway could not use the NBA Jam title anymore. That's why he did like Showtime on NBC, which I did also. And that's why Acclaim said, oh, we can just basically take this whole thing and do a College Slam based on this. And they brought me in for a weekend to just do the announcing for that. But yeah, that's why I turned to, you know, the different titles and Hang Time, et cetera, because they could
go Hang Time, all that was all in the same thing. Did you do those two as well?
I didn't do Hang Time. Hang Time was actually Neil Funk, the Bulls announcer at the time. So it was after the success of Jam, the thinking was, oh, well, like how people later went with 2K and Madden. Mm-hmm. Oh, we got to get a real broadcaster. Tim's in-house guy. There was no perspective, no history with me. It was just like, I happened to be part of that. And I think I was kind of overlooked, like, wow, we got to get a professional now. So they brought him in and it just wasn't the same. I love Neil Funk, but I don't think it was, you know, an easy transition for a guy who has been doing his whole life courtside. As I said, it's really tough. You know, it's not an easy thing to sit in a studio for hour after hour, you know, just like shredding your voice. And same thing, Marv Albert. I think he did one of the home versions for a claim of NBA Jam. And then I was brought back in because people said that he was bored with it. You know, it was just not his thing. Yeah. He didn't realize the importance of it. He wasn't an actor. He's just like, you know, literally like phoning it in.
Yeah. No, I could be like that. So you have an impressive resume, like Jason mentioned, a dozen pinball games, probably even more. NBA Jam, NFL Blitz. NFL Blitz is, if not, it's a toss-up between Jam and Blitz. It depends what household it is or how mm-hmm. old you are.
Yeah.
Blitz was the closest connection to Jam because, again, I had those other things that were kind of introduced. You had NBA Live 95 be introduced. You had, you know, the 5-on-5 got popular again mm-hmm. to throw off the 2-on-2. But when you got Blitz, it's like you can hit a guy after, you know, after the
totally
play.
Unnecessary, but a whole lot of fun to watch. Arnie, let's see that again.
So then, you know, you got you saying that, and then you got guys celebrating and doing all kind of crazy stuff. You can throw a fiery football. Like,
yeah.
I just thought it was just ahead of its time and introduced – it kept fun. You know what I mean? Like, you don't find games like that anymore, and that's why it's so beloved or able to pass down because there's only a few buttons. You know what I mean? A few – you know, obviously in Blitz, you got a sheet, mm-hmm. a page or two of plays – where you can flip, you can, you know, do whatever you wanted to do. And then also you only, you know, I think it wasn't 11-11. So it was probably like 7-on-7, but how they did it was they had the wide receivers. They didn't highlight the linemen.
Mm-hmm.
They had the tight ends and then the guy that snaps. And then you go out and you had all these eligible receivers. And, you know, also you can do an option,
mm-hmm.
you throw it to anywhere. You throw it back and throw it forward. Like it was like the rules were broken and
yeah.
The scoring was so high in the game that just made it so fun. How was that when you were, you know what I mean, recording Blitz?
Blitz was, I mean, that was the first moment where, like, it was just a blank canvas. I didn't just have to read lines. I said, once I started writing, and Dan Forden, who actually did the music for Mortal Kombat, was my producer on that. Great guy, great sense of humor. So we were just like a couple of kids, you know, just sitting around thinking like what we could do that would be kind of crazy and irreverent. And he just ripped his head off. Oh, no, it was just his helmet. Darn it. You know, we just started to have fun. As I said, we're just same as being like six or, you know, a 10-year-old kid watching football and just, you know, having fun and, you know, making up stuff. So, you know, then when Madden came along, you were mentioning like how much fun Blitz is. I've often said to people like Blitz and Jam are like the game that you have to take a break from the sim games, just like in the middle of it, like, hey, man, let's take 10 minutes to play Jam. Let's take, you know, to play Blitz. And Madden actually just put in a new kind of arcade game within the game that they're actually doing for esports too, to give people that fun of just like quick pickup. Anybody can pick it up, go fast, easy plays, not have to do, you know, hours of setup and, you know, thinking and planning. And we did that the same thing with, you know, Mutant Football League. It plays fast like Blitz, and you can have fun, but it plays realistically, but there are extras that, you know, the hazards and the bribes and all that stuff. So it's always important to, you know, make sure that a game is still a game and fun for me. I've thought about, you know, what would it have been like if I got more into sports announcing, and people always asking, have you ever done it, considered it? Esports announcing for Madden or 2K is like, I don't think I could do it. First of all, because you have to have so much commitment to learning every bit of the roster, league, whatever, to pull off even within those games or esports to be able to announce like that. And my fun is like the between the lines. I'm the Seth Rogen, you know, or someone who comes in to like to have fun with it, you know. So I don't want all that extra pressure of like, you know, sitting courtside, just going through the motions. I love the idea of like coming in as a guest, you know, announcer, if, you know, for a few minutes or something else. But yeah, the new sim games, man, they're just so involved. I don't even know how those guys get through those scripts.
Kind of like how people have been saying about Snoop Dogg, which I think is
yeah.
needed.
Yeah.
I think we need more guest announcers yeah. who aren't just like giving you the straight up, you yeah. know, this play, that play. You know, we need a variety of yeah. like emotions when yeah. watching the game. Not everybody wants to hear the, you know, the basic calling of the game. So I think you should do it.
Personally. Yeah, even on I've noticed NBA TV, they do what do they do? The watch along room, basically. Now they have a thing where they're just kind of like watching the game, talking about it, and side story. So it's not like they're courtside announcing. That's interesting, mm-hmm. just to get some backstories and whatever. But I do think even those guys would be fun for a personality like myself or someone to come in to have a little, to stir it up a little bit. I actually got to do a watch along party. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the WWE Austin Creed, Xavier Woods, but did a show of his. And when they had the Survivor Series here in Chicago, I got to do a watch along. So we're watching, and with all the other crazy wrestlers, you know, all around me, it's like, that was fun because we just, you know, just had a ball, had a party.
Have you met Jim Ross?
I have not.
Oh man, that's a great voice right there.
I was going to think, I was like, yo, did you do WWF arcade game?
No.
Okay. No. Okay. Cause nah, I mean, you know, most of the voices were like, obviously I remember Jim Ross doing some stuff, but though that was another game that kind of lined up with the arcade style.
Mm-hmm.
And arcade style for gamers was like no holds bar, yeah, rules off. You know, because I played Jam so much to a point where I couldn't play NBA Live 95 with the rules on.
Mm-hmm.
But turn all the rules off, trade Penny Hardaway to the Bulls, trade Shaq to the Bulls.
Wow.
And with roster player 99 and just be pushing people and just dunking everything and throwing lobs and beating teams by like 100 points. And it was because of Jam.
Uh-huh.
Because you had that opportunity to, you know, foul, and yeah, I'm sure Jam comes from the school of arch rivals, and
yeah,
I mean, you can go down the line as far as the evolution of video games and what's fun. But again, I feel like games that require the less buttons are the most, yeah, entertaining.
Well, think of it, when you're telling me that, you know, you were 9 years old when Jam came out, you know, you could not have been taking a you know, controller today and doing a, you know, a NBA 2K. It's just too much. But as a kid, you could grab that joystick, hit this button. So it's in your blood. Like anybody who grew up with Jam goes, oh, there's that. Like there's a need for that quick release fun. And as a kid too, what is more fun than breaking all the rules? Like, oh, I can do that. I can shove the guy. I can push the guy. I can, mm-hmm, you know, I can do a somersault on fire. I mean, that's your first experience as a kid. That's your avatar. There's an NBA player. Now I'm him actually on fire doing somersaults. I mean, what a rush. You're not going to have a 10-year-old kid that picks up, you know, NBA 2K for the first time and sees a lumbering, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, coming down like, and he dunks it with authority. It's like getting the same yayas, man. It's just like those guys also look like the Walking Dead.
LaMarcus Aldridge was
The sim thing is never like, it's always a scary world when I see the dead eyes, you know, and the movement. It's like, I'd rather see the big heads of NBA Jam. Those guys are like, you know, like carnival scary, trying to recreate real life. Kind of spooky to me.
So now we're in 2021. NBA Jam is just released in 2020, mm-hmm, through Arcade 1UP. And, you know, probably most 30 to 40 to 50 year olds have brought this game to their household because they've always wanted, you know, a home entertainment system, mm-hmm, to be able to play this game. And now it's a family heirloom to be passed down and the game to be taught. And it's hilarious. Like you mentioned, people showing their kids like, hey, that's the NBA Jam guy. How does it feel? I guess, is this considered getting your flowers after so long of the anniversary of the game, or just, you know what I mean, to be reintroduced and seeing people fall in love with this game all over again?
Well, it's kind of like, it's flowers from the fans to know the appreciation, but it's kind of like dead flowers at my doorstep because they did a license with EA. So no one gets a penny from this except them.
Wow.
So I'm watching, you know, basically like, you know, having a hit in the 60s, you know, a big hit, and then someone re-releases my greatest hits and they go, sorry, you're not going to get any money on this, but you want to help us promote it? We'll give you a couple free CDs. That was kind of the deal. It's like, really?
Yeah.
So I wish I could get behind it more. And I've had some conversations with those guys and hoping still something works out. I said, I want to offer a way for fans, if they're crazy enough to spend $500 on NBA Jam cabin, they got to have some serious love. So I said, what if we do a signature edition? You know, I can come out the factory, start autographing games, throw an 8x10 in, and I can also, we can have a separate website or, you know, thing where you can order custom calls for your arcade machine. So it's like, welcome to Trayvon's 1UP Arcade NBA Jam Basement, your man cave edition. And this is Jason's, or, you know, this is Jason's, and this is Trayvon's house. So it's Trayvon's rules. buy a good beer. Don't, you know, don't bring the cheap stuff, whatever. Have something unique, specific that you can upload, you know, some sound bites from me.
You've reached Trayvon Edwards. To hit a 2, press 3. To hit a 3, press 2. For all other options, say or press boom shakalaka. Leave him a message at the buzzer. Just don't make it one of those long, detailed messages. Truth is, he never listens to him anyway, and frankly, doesn't care. Kaboom!
As I said, signature stuff, a package, you know, stuff that has like pictures and, you know, magazine covers from the early days, but something that makes it more personal, and just have me do, you know, promotional stuff, promotional videos, picture me, you know, with the thing. And, you know, there's so many things we could do creatively. And we have not gotten it done yet. So it's frustrating because I've been the ambassador for that brand forever. And since 2011, there has not been a new version, but I'm still out there pushing, hyping it, getting it into NBA stadiums, got it on ESPN for a 25th anniversary, did highlights for ESPN, you know, got it done with different NBA teams. And here's One Up Arcade. No one ever reached out to me. Didn't even think, you know, like, hey, you might want to be involved or let you know or whatever. And it wasn't, and it's not just about the money. First, it was just about, I could have fun. We could have fun, you know, doing something with this. And since you bought the title, wouldn't you be interested in, like, you know, getting me in any way? And it's that's tough. That's tough for me right now. And I'm not going to, you know, burn that bridge because I think that, you know, I think it's just someone within the company that's like, you know, purse strings or something, like they didn't budget for it, whatever. The people that I've spoken to have been great creative guys, like, yeah, we could get you on QVC, selling the game and whatever. But it's kind of like watching, you know, I mean, they want to sell a million games. The first NBA Jam game, I made about $800 or $900, you know, which $50 an hour back then was fine. But 30 years later, almost, and them releasing $500 a game to make a million, that's $500 million. Whether or not they hit their $1 million, you know, threshold, I don't know. But it'd be nice to get just that much, you know, back on the back end. But not, as I said, but it's more about having the fun. Like, I'm out there doing the stuff anyway. I could do great highlights, videos, promotional stuff for you. I'm going to help you sell more games. I'm not looking for a handout. I just, that's my baby. It's like someone, like we had a divorce and, you know, someone else, you know, that's my car, that's my wife, you know, down the street. It's like, I want a part of it. You're not going to, you know, get my baby and, you know, run with it. And, you know, their articles in ESPN, you know, starts out like, if you've ever played NBA Jam, boom, shakalaka, he's on fire. You know, Tim Kitcher, the legendary voice, this wakes up something in your childhood, whatever it was. That was the headline. And then they talk about how they're going to go out and sell a million games, but they didn't mention their, and they're not working with Tim Kitcher.
Right.
You know, I become the focus of their marketing publicity, just the fact that I'm connected to the game, but still getting nothing back from them. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully whoever's listening, you know, because it might be a fan who works for somewhere or wants to bring in Tim Gethrow, you know, he is ready to work and hopefully they give you your just due because you are a legend to us and not only to us, but the world, man.
I appreciate that.
One question that we ask to most of our guests is, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
Wow. That's a tough one because you don't want to give up on certain dreams and aspirations. And the classic, you know, kind of poster is like, never give up on your dreams, never give up on your dreams. But it's more like, no, we were talking about change earlier. You don't know that the path, there could be many paths. It was like, be open to other things. Like, I thought, I'm just an actor. And I was like, no, I'm also an artist. And later on, like, I'm also a voiceover artist. I'm a writer. It's creativity. It's like, I think I was narrowing the thinking of like, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be a success. I'm going to be a failure. You know, so much pressure and having to be the thing. It's like, just follow what keeps you creative and happy. You'll find a place, you know. So you see, if you choose it as a career, or you see yourself, you know, for whatever reason in one spot, you know, locked in, then you're limited to other things that are happening. Like in one day, one little thing happens. Like now I pay attention to anything and everything. Like there's all kinds of little, you know, magic kind of like invitations coming your way. If you're listening, paying attention, where you can, creativity is creativity. It doesn't just go into one thing. You know, if you're a creative person, it just means that, you know, you're open to playing, you know, you're open to possibilities. And so I would tell my 18-year-old self, like, don't put so much pressure on yourself. You know, keep following things that, you know, make you happy, but look for anywhere and anything that can keep you alive through being stimulated, creative all the time in every way. The good things and the money, the career things will come out of that. But don't get locked in and don't feel like, and you don't do this, like my dream. I was going to go to Second City, going to be in Saturday Night Live, or I'm going to be in movies or TV or whatever it was. Like, that was hard to just go, it's not happening. It's not working. Where there were so many other things that if I want to start over again at 18, you know, I could have said, well, go this path, you know? So yeah, go easy on yourself, but never stop looking for everything that can keep you sustained through creativity and connect with friends. And, you know, a lot of times, like, you're so busy following one path, like, you don't know how many friends or a new person just meeting you guys. Like, the next day, the moment you come in contact, the randomness, the beauty of what you share and what you can do to collaborate. And there's so many people, especially during the COVID times, like, we meet people virtually, like, you're just another little, you know, entity, little life that comes through my computer. It's like, it's magic. You know, we hook up, we have a good time. And then there might be some creative thing we could do or just stay friends. But it's just keeping yourself open, man. Keeping the blinders off.
Man, well, this has been great. Thank you again, Tim.
Yeah, my pleasure. Really, really great to meet you.
This was awesome. This was great, dude. This is one of my favorite episodes. This is why you do podcasts, man.
Exactly.
Awesome. Throwing up the same wins the game. Ooh, boom shakalaka.